bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Hello, welcome to the photo show. It's just me again. Everybody's working except me. I'm here talking to you, doing my podcast, and doing fine. And the chat room's already started putting links in that I'm never going to click. It was a bit taxing last week, but we got through it in the end. So here we go then. The week's photo news, as read by me, Reggie Bosanquet. First things first, it seems that the camera market in the UK is taking a bit of a hit. It's down 20% overall. They're talking about point and shoot specifically here. This has come out from a company called GFK Retail and Technology. Their survey says that the reduction in the compact camera market is quite significant. They're talking about a 46% drop. Or 46% fewer consumers bought digital cameras overall, and that the UK photo market fell by 9.2% in January alone compared with the previous 12 months. So definite downturn. The only problem you've got is, with all of these kind of surveys, it's horses for courses and it's lies, damn lies and statistics, because this only relates to sales of point-and-shoot digital cameras. Now, A, you've lost Jessop's, which was probably one of the bigger outlets on the high street anyway. And it'd be interesting whether Amazon sales get recording into UK sales, because, of course, their money goes over to Liechtenstein. But also, they're saying that a point-and-shoot model is a fixed-lens compact with an optical zoom under 10 times. Now, the only problem you've got with that is that an awful lot of them are over 10 times zoom. So I would say there's quite a few cameras that are going outside of the scope of this survey anyway as well. But I'm sure Jessop's closing has had quite a bit of an influence on it. But there you go. You're buying less compacts, but then again, bridge cameras are good, and there's a lot of the stuff that's got interchangeable stuff is now very cheap with Micro Four Thirds, so why wouldn't it? Never mind. Have to look at the details indeed, says Teresa. Absolutely. Is it because everyone's going for CSCs and DSLRs now, says Adam? I agree, probably is. Very good point. Phase One has brought out a whole pile of stuff this week. They've got some wonderful things. This is the ICQ2 series. These are a set of digital backs. They're shooting in 6.45 format in inverted commas. They've got a high-speed wireless connectivity linked in with them, and they've got 13 stops of dynamic range, which is wonderful. And the Phase One IQ280 enables also remote capture of your stuff onto its iPad application, which you get from the Mac App Store. They're talking about 80 megapixels, though, so you won't get many of those photos even on a 64 gig iPad. The 60 megapixel one, the 260, has got a very nice back. It's got ranges of exposure which go from 1/10,000th of a second up to a whole hour. All you need is a medium format camera to shove these onto, and you're off and running. The other thing that you'll need as well is £29,000 or $39,900, which is kind of the right price for these things. They do seem to cost that kind of level of money. I've got to say, though, that the price of the larger sensors in the 6.45, you'd have thought they'd have come down by now in that format. But no, there you go. God forbid they ever make one that's 4x5 or something. That'd be even worse. Phase One have also come out with some image editing software. They've got a RAW converter. Their Capture One software is now at version 7. They've made a load of enhancements to it, and they're saying that it now supports a wider range of cameras, specifically with new Canons and also with the new Samsung cameras. It looks really, really good. There's a trial version you can download, and it works on Mac as well, so if you want to get it and have a play on your Mac, you can. And a 30-day trial of this will be well worth it if you can find a way of resetting it and downloading it again, because if you want to buy it, it's going to cost you €229, so that's going to punch you probably about 150 quid, something like that. It's an awful lot of money for just something that's a raw processor and output, but it says it's got better dynamic ranges and it's got a better output qualities and formats. I'm gonna have a play with it. I haven't had a play yet because I only got the press release this morning, but it looks pretty good. But I don't know if I want to part with 160 quid when you've got something like Adobe's RAW Converter. Yep, RAW Converter to DNG is absolutely free. And I've got to say, Teresa, you're saying you're thinking of going with it. Well, I would, definitely. I've changed my workflow entirely now since Adobe decided that they wanted to cut the 6D out from Photoshop 5. I've had no choice but to try and find a different way of dealing with my RAW images out of the 6D. And I've got the DNG converter. And all I do now when I bring the files down is just straight conversion, open them up. I can't see any change in image quality from if I process them in 6 or 5 on the trial version of 6. The other thing that's interesting as well, by the way, is my trial version of 6 is continuing to let me use it, even though it's at 60 days now. So I don't know how that's worked, but I'm not messing with it. No, it's useful on the odd occasion. DNG converter is excellent. Go with it, definitely. May have to have a play with that. Yeah, it seems nice, but I can't afford to get it fully. I don't think either. That's a bit of a price. There is a new auto sensing transmitter out there. It's called the Pocket Wizard. Here it is. It looks fairly samey. It goes on your hot shoe mount, and effectively, it's got a little dial that will get it to sense whether you're sending information to the camera or whether the camera's sending information out. So one of the things that you've got is you want to trigger flashes or you want to trigger the camera, then you can decide which way around you want to do it. And you want something that would be able to intelligently switch between the two. So when you want to trigger the camera, it can do it, and when you want to trigger an off-camera flash, it can do that as well. The only thing I'll say while I get up and just go and get it is that it's not an intelligent switching kit, but Calumet do their own brand 4-channel wireless trigger kit, and one goes on your camera, one goes on your in your hand, and you can either put another flash on it and it then becomes a flash trigger, or you can just plainly stick it on and trigger your camera to shutter mode. It comes with all the wires that you'll possibly need for sync and that kind of thing. And it's 29 quid. The problem that you've got with this thing is that it's 100 quid. It's an awful lot more, a hell of a lot more. And I can't see that it does a great deal better than buying this thing would to get you going. So think about it carefully. Polaroid have decided to open some shops. They're talking about getting people back in touch with the hard copy of their photos. The store is designed to allow people to easily liberate their photos from their smartphones, cameras, online photo sharing services, or photos in shoeboxes tucked away in their attic. By making printing available from a wide range of mediums in a wide variety of materials, e.g. canvas, metal, bamboo, the shops aim to reintroduce the tangibility of photography. This is all backed by Polaroid. Now, I like the idea of what they're saying here. I mean, you can basically go in with your smartphone and you can plug it into the stuff that they've got there. They'll let you mess around with the photo. You can Photoshop it, do whatever you want to do to it. And then you order it as an output, and you can either buy it as a frame print or you can buy it as a piece of paper. You can even buy it as a slab of acrylic. If you go into their store that they've got at the moment as a trial, you can take the cell phone photo that you've got, you can shove it into them, put it on a piece of acrylic that's 7 foot by 4 foot, and if you part with the $2,500 that it costs to print it, they will print that acrylic and deliver it to you. There's a whole load of stuff they can do in-store, but some of the more wacky stuff, like printing on bamboo and that kind of stuff, they've got to go outside for it, so you'll have to give them your postal address and they'll have to send it on to you. I've got to say, I read this story to start off with, and when I saw the word Polaroid, I sort of think, well, I thought, well, you know, this is Polaroid, just end result's going to be the same. They're just going to go belly up, but at least they're having a go, I suppose. But the more I think about this, if you've got this in your shopping centre and you've got a pile of photos on your phone, you go in, if you could dump it very, very quickly and then say, I'm going to be back in an hour to pick up my prints, and your prints are there, and you could order something like a phone cover, or you can order some table mats or coasters or something like that, I think that could really take on. That might not be that bad. The more I think about it, the more I like it. I might be as stupid as they are, and it might end up with me in bankruptcy as well. But I like the idea of it as well. Who knows? Teresa said, I had a Polaroid when I was a kid. I couldn't afford the film for it. I just had the one. It does sound fun. Yes, it does. Absolutely. Hmm. My Polaroid, mum and dad had a black and white Polaroid. It didn't do colour. And you had to squeeze the focusing knob on the top to turn it before you depressed it. I need to hunt that out because it's up at my parents' house. I'll get that down and we'll put it up here. We'll have it as a little display. What's next? High fashion camera straps. If you're easily parted with your money, then watch out, because it looks like you could end up with these colourful camera straps for your very expensive little camera. It's a New York-based designer named Sarah Francis Kuhn, or SFK, and Meredith Wendell. They've teamed up to bring you some snazzy camera straps that are made out of highly decorated rope and also climbing materials and things like that, and ropes and chains. If you want to buy one of these, they are $125. Oh dear. They'll fit on your DSLR, they'll fit on your compact, they'll fit on your iPhone. They do one for your iPhone as well. It is utter and total bling, says the chat room. I agree. It's a camera strap, not a piece of bloody jewellery. Thank you, Adam. Chains, now we're talking, says Pete. Yes, we love these. They look nice. They look really good. They're snazzy and they're fine, but they're $125. Come on. They're just a bit of climbing rope. If you've got some end caps or a bit of metal or something like that, I bet it wouldn't be that hard to make these yourself. I mean, come on, girls. Don't rip people off. Into the meaty news then. Nikon have released a couple of cameras. This is the first one. This is the first compact camera from Nikon that's got an APS-C sensor in it. So it's a little bit larger. It's got a little bit lesser light gathering capability. It should have a decent low light capture as well to go along with it. But there's an awful lot of with this camera that I can kind of walk away from. It's a 16.2 megapixel CMOS sensor. It shoots 12-bit and 14-bit RAW, which is pretty impressive. It's got ISO from 100 to 25600. So again, your low light capture should be pretty good on this. I've not seen any test shots for the high ISO stuff, but the quality image of the images that I've seen so far with it have been very, very good. It shoots full 1080p video. It's got an 18.5 millimeter lens, but don't forget, of course, the APS-C sensor that's inside it is a crop frame sensor, so that's going to give you 28 millimeters equivalent, and it goes down as low as 2.8, which a lot of the f2.8, which, you know, a lot of the cameras do at this kind of level anyway. There's no optical viewfinder on the front. You've got a 3-inch screen on the back of it. It looks pleasant, but it's a fixed lens. It doesn't come off. It doesn't do out anything special, and you'd like it if it was. The no optical viewfinder bit. If you want an optical viewfinder, you can get one, but the optical viewfinder is going to cost you $450 in addition to the cost of the camera. So if the viewfinder is going to cost you $450, you know this ain't coming in cheap. It's got a manual focus ring, which is a nice innovation, but it's $1,100. It's a 16.2 megapixel compact camera. And that's it. There's a lot of other compact cameras that are out there doing a great job. Yes, you've got the APS-C sensor. Yes, you've probably got the better low light capture from that, and the fact that you've got the expanded ISO. But really, $1,100 for a fixed lens compact? And they wonder why they're down 20%. I wonder. It does look rather plain, says the chat room. Yeah, have Nikon caught up then, says Adam. Yes, perhaps. Hold on, $1,100 for a Campok? What a bloody rip-off. Makes the Sony X1 look very cheap. Absolutely right. No, no, no. Too expensive. I agree entirely with the chat room there. That's it's a nice-looking camera. There's some nice pictures of it online. There's some nice pictures in the review. But the manual focus ring looks really nice and is a great idea. And the APS-C sensor's good but too, but if you're going to sell a compact camera, I really see you struggling getting over $600 for the value of a compact. That's why they're not going to sell. I mean, if that sells, then I'll eat my left shoe, fair enough, but I don't think it is. They've also got another in the Coolpix line. This is the L32 320. This is a little bit more reasonable. It's a super zoom camera, though. It's compact. It's got a 26 times zoom lens on it, 16 megapixel sensor, but it's CCD. It only does 720p recording of video, which I thought was quite interesting because I can't see why anyone would go backwards to 720 when the basic of camera, the most basic of compact, shoots 1080. It's four different automatic anti-blur functions on it. Lovely. But it's powered by AA batteries, so you haven't got to get a lithium ion out and specialist chargers and all that kind of stuff. All you've got to do is drop it out and stick your Duracells in and away you go. Which is a good idea. I quite like that. 26 times is silly, says Windrider. It is. You're going to have trouble holding that still. That's going to have to be on a surface, at least. It looks a lot better, says Teresa. Not bad at all, yeah. 26 times extreme optical zoom. That's going to give you the equivalent of 22.5 millimetres out to 585 millimetres. You could hold a 500mm lens steady quite happily to shoot if you've got a high enough capture range. The ISO range on this I couldn't find on the story, so I can't actually tell you. It's available on the 21st of March here in the UK, and it's £200. And I think there's the clincher for you. If you've got 200 quid burning a hole in your pocket or 1100 quid, would you rather buy something better with the other 700 quid that you're saving, 900 quid that you're saving, and go and buy this for 200 quid? At 200 quid, that's a good little camera to give to the kids. I mean, Ellis is coming up to 9 years of age now, so he's starting to want to think about taking his own pictures. And if it's not too big in the bulk terms, it's got a nice flexibility, it's got a nice range of zoom, and it's got a 16 megapixel sensor that's probably very decent. It'll shoot a little bit of low quality video for him to whack up onto YouTube. I think that could be a good kids camera at 200 quid. Good birthday present material. It's not a bridge either, though. It's a fixed lens, I think. I don't think the lens comes off. There isn't any extra stuff on it to get damaged by a kid. I used to have a Ricoh point-and-shoot that uses a lithium battery, but it could also run on AA's. Yep. I think that's not bad at all. I think that's a good... Yeah, I don't think it's... I know what you're saying. Adam in the chat room saying, I thought bridges were fixed lenses. Yeah, they are, but I don't think that sticks out in the same kind of way. I haven't found a 3D picture of it. I don't know whether that's kind of flush or whether that is just a pop-out. If it's pop-out and it's bridge, then yeah, it's going to be a little bit bigger, but it'd be good for him. I think it's a good camera. I think it's all right. It'll be not too bad at all. Petapixels this week showed you how to crop a person. These are not cuts of meat off the bone and on the bone. All the green lines tell you where it's good to chop if you want to crop your image. And all the red lines are where you shouldn't chop. So there you go. I don't know what... I get most of these. They're okay. The one around the knees, the green line, that's fine. I don't get the green line that's halfway up the calf. I've never seen chopping someone's legs off as a good image anyway. You either put the legs in or you take them out, in my view. But there you go. If you want to have trouble doing your chopping the mid-shin, I don't get that either, says Teresa. No, absolutely. The mid-shin one seems to be a bit of a mistake. Judging by the grip, I'd say it's a bridge, says Adam. But still, for a super zoom, you can't argue. No, you can't. And I think if you've got that bulge on the grip, it's going to help you as well with stability when you're on full zoom. Teresa says, I've chopped on that mark before myself, but never intentionally. No, not good. Canon has released a 35mm full-frame sensor that can see in the dark, unquote. I had a good look at this story. I found it quite interesting. Effectively, what they've done is they've made a sensor which is enormous. This thing's supposed to be able to see, and the list is impressive, small meteor showers, rooms that are lit with an incense stick. I don't know what idea why they've picked an incense stick, and scenes that are lit only by 0.3 lux of light from the moon, which is the equivalent, apparently, of a crescent moon. The thing is made up of a density of pixels that are 19 square microns in size. So each pixel or each sensor is gathering an enormous amount of light through it. That's going to make it 7.5 times the size of a standard 35mm slide. But it means also that it's immensely bigger than anything that Canon already do. There's no word on the application of this stuff. But it could be an astronomical sensor, says Adam in the chat room. Yep, it could do. I think, to be honest, looking at the range of images that they've placed online, I think this is going to be aimed more a little bit at security cameras. So I think you're going to see very low-light security cameras that are operating in counterintelligence and surveillance type things. So there you go. It's dark side of the moon type technology. Bigger sensor, more light pouring in. It's a fundamental principle, I guess, but it's going to cost them a bit to make it. Apparently, as well, the official Instagram camera is closer to realisation. I'm sorry about the grainy picture on this if you're watching the video, but the firm that's developed this, they've got the official, I don't know what you call it really, they've got the official design idea for it, Socialomatic Instagram camera. They've come up with a little video that shows how it's going to be used. They're saying it's going to have 16 gig of built-in memory. It's going to have an instant always-on Instagram compatibility. It's going to have a 4:3 image ratio touchscreen and output size. Why you would want to make an Instagram picture that's 4:3, I've got no idea, because it's never going to fit into any of the frames that are currently on sale. It doesn't fit a camera, because that's 3:5 or 3:2, and it doesn't fit on a TV screen, because that's 16:9-ish. Why you would make this 4:3, I've got no idea. Maybe the person that's designing it still thinks that's what monitors come in. Tell me that's a flash card and not a floppy disk. It does look like a floppy disk. No, it's actually, they reckon it's going to have a printer in it that's going to print out directly onto a celluloid piece of film. There you go. I can't say. It looks horrific. There's no price. They reckon it's going to come at the first quarter of 2014. But I've got to say, chaps, I can wait. Nikon are opening a school in London. Yes. If you're somewhere near Oxford Street, they'll have a little premises that you can tootle along to. They're going to offer courses from beginners to advanced, as well as specific training for specific items of equipment. It's scheduled to open on April the 9th. It'll be open on weekdays, Tuesday through Friday, and they'll be able to offer specialist training on Saturdays. The UK General Manager, John Walsh, said, by creating a Nikon training facility in the heart of central London, we're able to offer everyone increased access to the very latest Nikon equipment in a fantastic photographic environment. If you don't mind parting with your cash and you're going to buy something anyway, then I'd go down, because you're probably going to get fantastic equipment to play with, probably very good tuition or very good advice on camera purchase. I think it's going to be a bit of a glorified shot, but you'll take that, won't you? Very nice. Well done, Nikon. Wish Canon would do one. Rhino have introduced something called the Rhino Cam. Now, if you've got an old uncle who died and left you a pile of medium format lenses, then this could be the thing for you. All you got to do is part with $500 for a start, and you've got to have a Sony NEX available to use, and you've got to have some medium format lenses. But if you do, they've got this thing that's a composite screen and plate that goes between the two, and it works already. The couplings for it that are available are a Pentax 645, Mamiya 645, and the Hasselblad 5 medium format lenses. And all you do is mount your lens on one side, mount your NEX on the other side. You can see on the video, if you look here, there's a little bit off to the left. That's your viewfinder, like you used to get on the old medium format stuff, where you'd look down through the top of it, and when you see it, you take the picture. But what it actually does, which is quite interesting, is it takes a whole pile of pictures, and then what you do is take that pile of pictures over time, and you put them into Photoshop, where it'll start to stitch them together again, and you'll end up with one large medium format image that'll be about 60 megapixels or so. It's a great innovation. It looks really, really good. I like the idea of it. I don't like the fact that I haven't got any of the other bits that are going to work with it. I haven't got any medium format lenses, and I haven't got a Sony NEX. But if you have, and you got $500, it looks like a decent price to then go and have some fun and make really big, really cool images. Well done, Rhino. The details of the Samsung NX1100 have leaked out, and they've leaked out because they put the user manuals online for no apparent reason. They've popped up. This thing's going to have, wait for it, a 20.3 megapixel sensor, 100 to 12800 ISO, supersonic dust reduction on the sensor,
a 3-inch LCD screen on the back, 8 frames per second shooting in full RAW, or 30 frames per second if you drop it down to 6 megapixel. No built-in flash, 1080p video, and it's going to have built-in 802.11n Wi-Fi and an SD card slot. There you go. No word on price, but if you're talking about a little interchangeable camera, interchangeable lens camera, then if this was $1,000, something like that, you'd probably think that to be a decent price. Even maybe $600 or $700, this could easily come in at that kind of price, because Samsung are very, very good with it. Excellent with the technology for always on Wi-Fi as well. And that's going to knock the Nikon into a cocked hat. And it is a changeable lens. Yeah, absolutely, Teresa. Looks nice, but it's a bit yawn-worthy, if you ask me. Never rated Samsung cameras. I've had a go with the Samsung camera, and I liked the picture it took. I thought it was okay. No flash on it, no. You could probably get a flash that adds on the top. It's got you can get your standard TTL stuff on the top of it. It's got a hot shoe, so. I can't use LED screens well enough. I need a viewfinder, says Teresa. You got no choice, girl. They're getting rid of you. That's why you can't use your iPhone. Never mind. And the last thing that we've got to talk about is the Pentax. This is a touch-operated camera on a screen. There's no outside buttons on it. It's called the Optio WG2. It's a tough and rugged camera that you can take anywhere, allegedly. I think we talked about this on last year's show on the version 1 of this. It's waterproof, dustproof, shock-resistant. You can use it underwater to a depth of 12 metres, which is pretty far down. You can withstand a drop from 1.5 meters. It'll stand sub-zero temperatures down to minus 10 degrees C, and you can rest a weight of 100 kilos on top of it. It's also got a 16 megapixel back illuminated CMOS sensor, full HD movie recording, 5x optical zoom with a 28 millimeter wide angle coverage at the low end. It's got a 3-inch LCD monitor on the back. And it comes equipped with an upgradable GPS module if you want to get it. The WG2 and the WG2 GPS cost £229.99 or £279.99 respectively. So that's $299-ish and $350. It was great. Yeah, I mean, again, if you're talking about one for the kids here, drop from a metre and a half is absolutely perfect, and it's £229, so it's only £29 more expensive than the bridge camera that we've just looked at. Certainly for my little girl, if you gave her that when you're on holiday by the pool and said, off you go and shoot some pictures, she'd absolutely run amok with it. It's got a little built flash in as well, those little white dots that you can see in the front of the ring if you're watching the video. Those are its little LED flashes that are on the front. They're not going to be brilliant, but we shall see. Is it kid-proof? I'll let you know. I'll find out. There you go. That was the week's photographic news. There is no more. Questions? We've had some good questions this week. Excellent questions. I had to look a few of them up. First question comes from Lee about the AF on button. We'll try hard not to remember that. We didn't really share ourselves in glory there. Hi, chaps. I wrote the other day asking about AF on button. Many thanks for answering the question. And yes, Mr. Rankin, I will read the bleeding manual. Although, I'm still not entirely sure what the point of the button is for stills photography. Well, you've got to remember that in your menus, you've got a customization option available. So you can add on what the button does. And if you find in your menus, you'll find AF on button on or off. And when it's on, you can put the mode that it's into. So you can use, if you point and you do a part press, it holds the focus and then move across to reframe and then follow through on the press with the shutter and it will take the image. Well, if you want to shoot sports, though, you've got continuous focus AF servo. And then as you hold that down, it'll constantly adjust itself. Well, what you can do is program the AF on button to be the continuous autofocus process. And then you can have the button on the front doing nothing else other than exposing the image. So you can have two different types of autofocus on the two buttons. So one can be your static and reframe, and the other one can be a continuous servo mode. But you'll have to set that from your internal menus. Definitely does it on Nikon. Definitely does it on the Canon 6D because I had a play with it this week. That'll change the way you shoot a little bit, perhaps. But it definitely works. I've had a go this week and it's pretty useful. I'm not totally into it yet, but I will be. I'll get there. Thanks for the question, though, Lee. Keep them coming. If you've got a question for us, send it to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. We'll read it out. Promise.
Dennis has sent a question. Dennis Weir. Hi, fellas. Great show. Subscribe to all the channels. Love it to bits. Cheers, mate. There's a small sprung lever on the front of my Nikon D3100 on the outer edge of the lens and the mounting ring at approximately 8 o'clock. I've got a picture here if you have a look at it. I think it's a little grey bit that's just at the left-hand edge there. There's a slightly different view. My question is... it can be pushed in, but mounting a lens or body cap doesn't make contact with it. Can you advise me what this is for? Now, I can't absolutely tell you what that's for at all, because there's nothing in the manual that explains it. I can't find any forums that explain what it is. And it looks like it depresses inwards and goes down as well, because it's in a kind of slot. The only thing I would say was I went back to thinking about when I was I had a Pentax lens, and the Pentax lens had an external contact on it that you could move, and it changed the blades. This I don't think is changing the blades. I think this is probably just to make sure that it's got contact and the bayonet's in correctly, and it's not been forced with it open on one side. I would say that it actually moves down probably, and it's probably pushed by the bayonet on the lens, and once it's in place, that'll then tell the Nikon that there's a lens fitted. I would say it probably works more when you've got your AF stuff, so you've got a manual lens, an old Centon or something like that, some crappy old lens that's got manual focus only on it, so it doesn't recognise it's on there unless that thing depresses and moves. If it's not that, I have no clue, Dennis, but I cannot find anything anywhere that will tell me what it is. So if anyone in the chat room knows, feel free. It's a little grey lug there at 9 o'clock on the left-hand side. And send it to me, and I'll send it on to Dennis. You've stumped me, mate. I'm only guessing. No idea, says the chat room. Thank you. Right, next question. Next question. This is from David. Hi, fellas. How come when I want an image to be warmer for colour temperature, I increase the Kelvin values in Photoshop when processing more, but if you look at the Kelvin scale for colour temperature, increases add more blue to the image, therefore making it, in inverted commas, colder? And is there a neutral point for my images? It's a simple question, I know, and I feel I should know the answer, but I thought your guys would know. David in Wilmslow in Cheshire. So the Kelvin scale for light is about physical temperature of the light. So if you think about astronomy, they say that Betelgeuse, which is a big star that you can see 600 light years away, is a cold star because it's about to collapse in on itself. And it's bright red, and you can see it's red in the sky if you look up. All the stars that are white or bluish in colour are extremely hot. So if you think about a gas flame, you've got a flickering fire with a yellow flame, and then you've got a gas jet on your stove at home. Well, clearly the gas jet is a stronger, higher level of temperature, and that's blue. And the colour temperature is the same process. You've got to bear in mind when you're using Photoshop, though, that what you're doing is inverting that scale to then compensate for warmth or cold. So when it says you need to increase the value in the Photoshop slider, and it goes up through the 6,000s and the 9,000 is the orangest you can get, that's an inverse compensation number. So what you're saying is you've shot the image at a very high level in blue, and we're giving it an equally high level in orange to compensate for the two. Okay, it's inverse, it's flipped over. But that's it. And is there a neutral point? Typically, you'd be talking about 5,000 Kelvin, they reckon, is the neutral point for something. But it's going to depend on what you shot it on. If you just shot a test card, then 5,000 Kelvin would be a neutral point. Anything under 5,000 is going to be the whiter colour temperatures, the 2,700s and those kind of things are all going to be oranger. Anything above that is going to be a lot more blue. There you go. I think I answered that. Did I answer that, chat room? Blue flame's the hottest, says Teresa. Yes, thank you. There you go. Next question is from Gary.
Hi guys, I'm coming up to a studio photo session with some friends. We've hired a local studio and we're looking to get some experience with flash equipment in the studio. No models, just posing for each other. Yes. My question is that I know that under flash my f-stops are affected and that I won't have the same ability that I have under outdoor light to use a short depth of field. But how is this the case? And is there an f-stop setting which I should try and use to as a maximum and a minimum? Cheers. Love the show. Gary. I think I understand your question. So first of all, then, if you talk about depth of field is not just about the distance to the subject, although that's the fundamental element when you're shooting outside. It's about the intensity of the light compared to the rest of the intensity of the light from the rest of the image. So if you're outside, you find that you're losing light very rapidly as you go further away. So the things that are close in give off a lot, the most light for the camera to absorb, and then the stuff at the background is not giving off as much light, so therefore the focusing on that becomes a lot more difficult, a lot changed through the focal length of the lens. When you're in a studio, the intensity of the light is significantly higher. So what you shoot outside at f2.8, you'll probably get the same effect at f5.6 or f6.3 in a studio with a lot of light. And the more light you add, the shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter the depth of field will get through the focal point of the lens. If you're shooting in a studio and you don't want to have any blurring on a portrait, say you want the whole of the person's face from the tip of the nose right the way through to the back of their head, or if they're turned slightly sideways, right through to the far shoulder in focus, don't get below f11. I mean, you cannot go below f11, and even then at f11, if you've got a lot of light in that studio, you'll struggle and you'll have some depth change in the light and focus. If you're going to go for f13, then I'm pretty sure you're safe anywhere you go with a person anyway. But that's what it's about. It's about the intensity of the light and the depth, the way that it is, and the amount that the light carries and then reflects back to the camera. Because you've got more light in the studio, it means that your depth of field changes is a lot more stark. Mark S. has written in. Hey, I heard you and pick the 64 gig SanDisk Extreme on the big show the other week and say how good the price was on Amazon. I then read the tweets about the trouble getting the movies off the GoPro he has and really wanted an update as to whether these cards are any good or not and should they be trusted, or whether I should steer clear of them and take a couple of 32 gig cards instead. I've used the 64 gig. I've shot video with it on the 6D since that episode, Mark. The problem that I had was I formatted that in the GoPros initially, and I think the GoPros don't format it correctly. I think that's where the problem comes, because when I formatted them in the 6D, they've worked just fine. I've shot stills with them and I've shot video with them in the 6D, and they've worked perfectly. I haven't gone back to the GoPro and used them. So I'll maybe have to go back and see if there are a difference. There is a definite step change between 32 gig and 64 gig, though. Some of your older equipment won't deal with it, and you might need a firmware update for some things. I think that's what I need with the GoPros. But the GoPros didn't like them at all, didn't format them properly, and then I lost a lot of the stuff that was on there. I got it off one card, but not off the other. I would say have a look at your camera, see how old it is. My 6D deals with it just fine. I haven't shoved them in anything else, some of my older cameras maybe, to see if there's a difference, but you should be okay. You should be, yes. I found that formatting in my DSLR is much better than in any of the smaller cameras that I have, says Teresa. Yep. Windrider's had a look in the chat room. He's got a D5100 and it's got a mystery lug as well. It triggers something inside the body under the lens opposite the lens release button, but a standard lens doesn't touch the lug. Yeah, that's what Dennis was saying, I think. It's interesting what it does, but it does move and it depresses and it slides. So my favourite is the idea of the fact that it's something to do with the lens engaged, but if it's not touching, I can't see how. We'll keep going, Dennis, and if anyone knows the answer to Dennis's question, send it in, but I'm afraid I am utterly lost as to what that little switch does. Send an email to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com with the title Dennis's Lug. I think we might have the title of the show today.
That's it. That's all the questions. That's all the news. I'm on my own again next week as well. So if you've got a question, send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. Any of the questions that you send in, I'll do my best to answer them. If I can answer them, I will. If I can't answer them, I'll gladly hold my hand up. I'm not here to say that I'm a be-all and end-all of photography knowledge. And if you know the answer to any of the questions that I've answered wrong, send them in as well and I'll read them out. Just don't call me a name, all right? Have a good weekend. We've got Mac Show coming up next. See you soon.
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.